This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network. Welcome to the Political Review. My name is Quincy Parker, and I am excited to be in your company this afternoon. The questions and subjects of conversation today are born out of what we used to call 20 years ago water cooler conversation. It's that phenomenon where everybody in your circle is talking about the same thing because it's something that is it's grabbed the attention, it's grabbed the news headlines, it's what you talk about at fish fry, it's what you talk about in your family WhatsApp chat groups, it's what you row about on Facebook, it's behind what prompts the stories that get run in the newscasts and the order in which those stories may come. And today we're going to talk about it directly. We're going to talk about corruption today. Corruption, particularly in respect of the effects of corruption on state apparatus. Corruption as an influencer of the economy, as an influencer of politics, as an influencer of those things that cause and define and delimit the way we live our lives from day to day. The thing about being in the Bahamas and from the Bahamas and being a Bahamian citizen and resident, someone subject to the laws of the Bahamas, is that this is a country without multiple layers of government. This is a country in which an individual can pick up a telephone and call a policymaker directly and have an influence on that policymaker, either something benevolent or benign. Like my nephew is graduating from college. Is there a place that he could apply, or something more insidious? I want you to give my nephew a job when he comes home. And if you do, I'll do such and such for you. So there are some basic premises that I would like to present as background for our conversation today. I'm really excited about my guest in studio, and you'll understand why once I introduce him. Although, of course, if you're following on Facebook, you already know who it is. The fact is, when you look at the studies, corruption is seen as an obstacle to economic growth. Economists have long identified a number of channels through which corruption may affect economic growth. For example, corruption is said to distort incentives and market forces, leading to misallocation of resources. Corruption diverts talent and resources, including human resources, towards, quote, lucrative rent-seeking activities, such as defense, rather than productive activities. Corruption acts as an inefficient tax on business, ultimately raising production costs and reducing the profitability of investments. Corruption may also decrease the productivity of investments by reducing the quality of resources. For example, by undermining the quality and quantity of health and education services, corruption decreases a country's human capital. Corruption affects the quantity, quality, cost, and profitability of investment. Corruption undermines a country's tax structure and its revenue collection capacity. Corruption affects human development and wealth distribution, and it creates a biased tax system that affects income distribution. There's a study that was done by Gupta in 2002 and quoted by the IMF. And I'm going to quote from that study. It says, as corruption facilitates tax evasion, ill-functioning tax administrations, and exemptions that favor the wealthy and well-connected, this undermines the effectiveness of the tax base and the government's capacity to ensure equitable wealth redistribution from the rich to the poor, unquote. So as you can see from the academic papers that have gone into the research that I've done, this question of the effect of corruption on a state and on state agencies and on a country, this is not something with which the Bahamas is wrestling alone. And it's not something new. It's something that has been studied enough that people are able to draw conclusions based on empirical evidence, that people are able to posit a position based on data collected from around the world and basically where you have corruption. Yes, there are people who argue that it greases the wheels and makes things go more smoothly for business, but the deep thinkers and the people who do the research say that ultimately corruption is an obstacle to economic growth. And more importantly, for my purposes today, corruption affects human development. It isn't just about money. It's about how you live your life. It's about the opportunities that you as a citizen of a country have. It's about what you get to do and what your children get to do. It's about how your family gets to decide and make its way in the world. And so when we talk about corruption, whether it's political corruption, whether it's corruption in the civil service, whether it's corruption in the police force, whether it's corruption in the courts, whether it's corruption in any sphere of our existence, we're not just talking about what is happening in the narrow circumstance. We're talking about something that has the potential to affect the entire country, an insidious and potentially deleterious, something that really could hurt us, and something that might explain why we are in the dire economic straits that we are. And to my PLP family and friends who believe that our dire economic straits is a matter of FNM propaganda, wake up and smell the coffee. The PLP didn't lose the election because of FNM propaganda. The PLP lost the election because people feel poor and feel that there is no prospect to get wealth. And corruption is at the heart of that feeling. The perception that a corrupt system is keeping the rich rich and keeping the poor poor, and the reality of that perception, whether that is true or not, that is why the PLP lost the election. And whether the FNM learns the lesson or not remains to be seen. But the FNM must learn the lesson that the Bahamian people are not fools. They have seen. There's a wonderful quote from a movie called A Knight's Tale that I love. The situation is one opponent beats another opponent and stands over him and says, "You have been weighed, you have been measured, and you have been found wanting." And I say to the governing party, "You are being weighed and measured. And for all the talk pre-election about anti-corruption, and for all the talk pre-election about transparency and accountability, now is the time for less talk and more doing." Today I have as my special guest the Minister of Public Works, the Honorable Desmond, the Honorable T. Desmond Bannister. Mr. Bannister and I have encountered one another before in a number of different situations. I remember his time as Minister of Education quite well. There were some projects that were started at that time that I am still very interested in the disposition of, which I may get to if time permits. But today, he sits as the Minister of Public Works with responsibility for one of the areas in which our conversation lands very squarely: government contracts and tendering. It is there more than most other places that corruption can be problematic. And Mr. Bannister, welcome to the Political Review. I believe this is the first time for us together in this format.
Thank you, Mr. Parker. It's an honor to be on your show, and how much respect that I have for you. So I'm grateful that you invited me.
I'm going to leave that alone. It's very kind of you to say, sir. You know that is entirely mutual. But our love affair aside, you have outright accused PLP cabinet ministers of misfeasance. Misfeasance is a very specific term. Generally, it is an action against there's a charge in the courts called misfeasance in public office. But misfeasance itself is the wrongful performance of a normally lawful act, right? Something that is legal but done improperly or done with an intent to somehow contravene what the legality of the act is. And so I want to get to the heart of what you mean by misfeasance, whether or not the charge or the cause of action, I suppose we could call it, of misfeasance in public office is something that comes into play in the Bahamas. I know it's a matter of record in England and Wales and certain other Commonwealth countries. I want to know whether or not it is something that we as a society have the opportunity to make use of. Is it an arrow in our quiver? And I want to know what it is that you have to say to us about corruption in terms of public office, public spending, particularly through the contracting and tendering process.
Well, let me be clear, Mr. Parker, that the Bahamian people elected us because they suspected that many things that were going on in our country were not as they should be. It was important for us during the budget debate to illustrate many of the ills of our country, many of the things that we as a government are going to have to change. Now, in doing that, it is also important for us to say to the Bahamian people that the expectations that we have had of taking a shortcut, of getting an MP to do certain things for you, that those examples are things that we are going to have to change so that the playing field is level for everyone. It cannot be, for example, that my brother or my sister or my family member, it cannot be right that I'm going to make provision for them out of government assets to the detriment of someone else who may be more qualified than they are. It cannot be that I will do the same things for my friends or business associates, or that someone who gives me something can legitimately expect that I am going to treat them better than other people. It is important for us to get to the root of that in our entire society, and for all of our people to appreciate that, because I still get calls from people, and notwithstanding the state of the economy, if I say something to them, we've been forced to borrow a lot of money that we did not want to borrow. We borrowed that money because we met the economy in a particular state, and we have to work with what we met. But then someone will call me, and I will explain that to them, and they may say, well, you know, I'm only asking for one job. I'm only asking for my son or my daughter. And it may break my heart that I'm not in a position to assist them at this time. But I appreciate the circumstances that the Minister of Finance has to deal with. And I have to continue to tell them, be patient. We're going to try to make a difference for this entire country. Mm-hmm. And so when we seek to, in governance, when we seek to continually make exceptions, we create an atmosphere where there's an expectation of exceptions. And exceptions become the rule. Mm-hmm. So I know that you are speaking about corruption in the broader sense. And that is why I'm touching on this. Because it starts with the small things. And it starts with the expectations.
I don't want to interrupt your flow, but I really want to underline what you are saying. Because I think that we, as a society, like to absolve ourselves of our role in the corruption. As if a minister of the government or an officer of the in the uniform branch or a judge or whoever is going to, of their own volition, with no reason and no motivation, simply abridge their duties, right? It's when we make the phone call to the minister to say, please, and the minister says, I can't, and we say, listen, man, I vote for you, right? We are applying a form of pressure that has no other option but to lead to exceptions being made in the rules, which is a form of corruption.
And it's important for all of us to appreciate, Quincy, that there is tremendous pressure on each member of parliament to do what they can for their constituents. And all of them want to do it. But it's also important for us to remember that it is critical for us to create opportunity for all Bahamians. And that if we do what we believe we can do over the next few years, we will be able to create those opportunities where your son and my son will have a level playing field. They will be able to go out and get an education for themselves. They will be able to compete for jobs and opportunity. Mm-hmm. And they will be able to take care of their families. I think it's important for us, those of us in the political world, to see that from that wider perspective of doing good generally for our country and for our people. And so when you raise the issue of corruption is not only the MP who's taking kickbacks. Corruption is the whole wide spectrum of how we as a society govern our belief systems. To the extent that our belief system has changed over the years, we have got to all appreciate that we've got to go back to what we used to call old-time values. We've got to go back to appreciating that there's a moral fiber that guides our society, and that in doing so, we do things a certain way.
I have heard stories from sources about ministers in the Menace administration issuing or directives to shed excess weight. You got to get rid of some of the people in your ministry because just too many people. We can't afford to keep all these people, especially people who were hired right before the election. The reason I bring it up is because as you have correctly pointed out, what has happened, reportedly, allegedly, is that a person whose name ends up on a list makes a phone call to the minister, and the minister says, well, not that one. And 20 or 30 of those people who are on that list make a call to the minister, and all of a sudden, the question is asked, well, who can we let go? If we can't let go, when you tell me I got to shed jobs, and then every job I shed, they call the minister, right? So
well, I trust that is not happening. What we're seeking to do is reform the process. Mm-hmm. And the truth of the matter is that and since you're using the word corruption today, mm-hmm. the process was badly, badly corrupted. Our society cannot, we as Bahamians cannot bear the burden that was left on us as Bahamians. And I want you to appreciate this. A lot of times people look at it and say, the minister, this person. But the reality is that the burden is not on the minister, the burden is on the country. When that person who is not qualified or for whom there is no allocated spot in the public service is taken on, it is true that that person gets a salary and he or she or their family is happy. But the reality is you and myself as taxpayers are bearing the burden. And we have to consider that very seriously. When we want to know why we are paying this or that in taxation, and one of the things we don't see as a people, we don't see this direct taxation. And so we don't appreciate, for example, that we are paying so much more in many areas because we have overburdened the public service. Now, we have embarked on an exercise through the Ministry of the Public Service to right-size all of these ministries and to right-size the corporations. There are a number of persons who were taken on something I'd never heard of before in my life and my time in the public service, and that is two-month contracts mm-hmm. and three-month contracts. It was unfair to those people to take them on. It was something that was done just before the election. But you know, once you take someone on, even if you say it is a two-month contract, they have an expectation that when that two-month contract is over, if they perform well, they're going to have an opportunity to stay on.
Yeah.
And so we have many, many young people who were fed this falsehood that after the elections, when the two-month period is up, when the three-month period is up, they're going to be taken on and they're going to be kept on and they're going to have a full-time opportunity to stay on. That was not something that the former administration could have afforded without raising our taxes, and that is not something that the country can afford now. I have many, many friends. I have many, many constituents who are in that position. But I have to try to explain to them the realities that face our country, the possibility of a downgrading, the other possibilities that impact us. And I have to say, listen, be patient. We have been elected to grow the economy. We are going to grow this economy. There are going to be opportunities. Those opportunities don't exist in the first month after you're elected because we haven't been able to do the things we need to do yet. But those opportunities will come through and they will exist.
The hard part of doing this job is waiting for things to play out in their proper form. So I'm going to ask you some questions, and you answer them as you can, right? I am not interested in the blame game, because I think that the Bahamian people, by and large, have had enough, right? The whole purpose of the whole point of, I think, the outcome of the May 10th election was that people felt that the Christie administration was no longer deserving of the trust of the country, the trust of the electorate. So the choice by the Menace administration to continually present information that sort of underlines that thinking is
well, let, let me let me good. Let me interrupt you just but, let me interrupt you, Mr. Barker.
Mm-hmm.
We are not interested in the blame game, but there must be consequences, and the Bahamian people want to see consequences for actions.
Mm-hmm.
So if something has happened that is wrong, it is important first of all for us to share it with the people. They want to know. They want to know if somebody was sitting in office, elected office for years, and accepting kickbacks. They want to know that. If someone was sitting in office and doing something else that was wrong, they want to know that. If someone, two men bid for contracts, tendered for contracts,
mm-hmm.
and the one who had the worst tender was accepted, they want to know that. But then the second step comes in. They want to know, what are we going to do about that?
That's all I'm saying. Yes. I'm saying that we are at the second step now. We want to know.
Well, in many respects, yes.
Yeah.
And I believe you saw some of those actions starting this week.
Mm-hmm.
And I dare say it will not be, it may be the first, but it will not, well, it is not the first, because you've seen there are other things have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it will not be the last.
I don't, oh Lord, you opened the door just now and I didn't realize I was going to see. So I have to ask, which I don't generally do, because, you know, WhatsApp is WhatsApp and Facebook is Facebook. But there is on Facebook and on WhatsApp a strain of conversation that says, Scotland Yard and the FBI are in town assisting with investigations into charges or potential corruption by former cabinet ministers. There was even a rumor that Shane Gibson was in a cell somewhere, and that they were looking at Obi Wilshkum and Perry Christie and Verdant from the gaming board, I believe, Verdant Scott, and so I will ask the question: is the FBI and Scotland Yard helping the administration to investigate corruption?
Marvin Dames is a highly capable professional. He knows exactly what he's doing, and he is going to do it in a very professional way. He has not done it through the media.
Mm-hmm.
He has shown respect to the Bahamian people by doing it professionally. And I suspect that if you ask him the questions, he will give you what answers he can.
Mm-hmm.
But I also suspect that anything that happens here has impacts in other areas around the world. And to the extent that law enforcement agencies work together, they work together.
The statement that you made, it was not the first and it will not be the last, was a definitive statement. Given that you are a cabinet minister bound by whatever conventions and strictures you're bound by, are you saying to us that someone else is going to jail?
I'm not saying that at all, and I'm not saying that anyone is going to jail. What I'm saying is that where Mr. Dames sees wrongdoing, he has indicated that he has a duty to the Bahamian people to bring it before the courts.
Mm-hmm.
And the courts will decide whether somebody goes to jail eventually. I know he's very, very serious about that. I know he has a group of highly professional officers who are working together. I know that they have sent, for example, to my ministry. They have sent for certain files. Mm-hmm. And I expect that they are going to investigate them properly and fully. And that those Bahamian professional officers who care about the Bahamas as much as you do and as much as I do, they don't want to see anything wrong either. Mm-hmm. And they work around the clock to ensure that whatever has to be done will be done. And it's not politically driven. They are professionals. Mm-hmm. They are police officers. They're the guys who live next door to you and me. And worked, those guys who work those long shifts that they were not properly compensated for, they're those same people. We have to respect their professional work. And whatever conclusions they come at the end of the day, we're going to end up seeing it. But it is not a political exercise.
Let me question you two more questions, and then we can go back to what you were saying. But first, I have to say to Brenda Butler Brown, who listens to the show religiously, apparently, I'm very, very excited that that you listen, and thank you very much. It was nice to talk with you the other night. The Attorney General made a statement in the Senate about not seeing anything that amounted to criminality. Was he wrong?
Well, perhaps he was a bit premature, but the Attorney General, remember, is someone who puts information before his officers and they give him advice. Mm. And then he is able to look at the advice that they've given. And so it may well be that he had not gotten the advice from his officers yet. It shows, based on what has happened this week, that he has gotten certain advice from his officers. Mm-hmm. It shows that he is very willing to act on that advice. And that he is going to do what he has to do to ensure that the Bahamian people appreciate that he is going to carry out his duties as Attorney General.
Fair enough. The next question is consequences, right? Before the election, there was... now, there was an assertion by... A particular faction of the FNM that, quote unquote, they go into jail.
Yeah.
We are in a new dispensation now. The FNM has a tremendous mandate, 34 seats to 35 seats to four in the House of Assembly. No question at all that you have the imprimatur of the Bahamian electorate to do whatever your agenda is. So are they going to jail?
Yeah. Quincy, you and I have a wonderful opportunity to educate our people. Mm-hmm. Let's remember that our judiciary is entirely independent. They deserve the respect of making decisions.
I don't know if John Isaacs would agree with you. John Lyons, I'm sorry.
Well, they are. They are independent, and they are independent under the Constitution. Mm. I was just so disappointed in the former administration when they said about attacking a judge in Parliament. It was the most disappointing, one of the most disappointing things I've ever seen, because they had an opportunity to educate our people about the difference, the independence of the judiciary, the difference between the executive and the legislature, and how we all have a part to play in the process. That wasn't done. A judge was attacked, put in a very unfortunate position. And as you know, judges can't come out and defend themselves. They live closeted lives. They can't socialize like you and I. They stay in the positions where they have to constantly guard themselves against those who would seek to influence them. And then they have to do right by all men and all women. We had a judge who gave a judgment, I think it may have been 100 pages long. It was a wonderful constitutional essay on something that had happened in our country. It indicated a number of things that had gone wrong. And instead of praising that judge for the principles and supporting the institution of the judiciary, that judge was attacked mercilessly. I can't say if anyone is going to go to jail. That's a decision that judges make. And in fact, not even judges, but him in juries. Because you will be judged by a jury of your peers eventually. Mm-hmm. And so you will get a jury of Bahamians listening to the evidence and making decisions as to whether someone is guilty of an offense. And then a judge will impose a sentence based on the decisions of a group of reasonable Bahamian men and women. But what the expectation of Bahamians generally is that this administration will ensure that anything that was covered up comes to light, that anyone who there's reasonable suspicion of having committed an offense will be brought before the courts, that the judiciary will do their jobs in ensuring that the person has a fair trial, and that the Bahamian juries will look at the evidence and make a decision based on their experiences in life.
You have charged, well, accused, or not charged, it's such a fraught word in the current conversation, but former cabinet ministers of misfeasance. Do you see the evidence based on your own investigations? And I know you've talked about BAMC, you've talked about mismanaged capital projects in Grand Bahama. There is, according to your public comment, evidence that former cabinet ministers are guilty of misfeasance in, but you didn't say that they were guilty of misfeasance in public office, which is an actual charge that can be brought in a court.
Well, not a charge; it's a civil action.
A civil action, yes. Yeah. So, based on your own information, are they liable to that action,
Mr. Parker? As I indicated to journalists from your paper. Mm-hmm. I am not in public life to destroy anyone. I am not in public life to besmirch anyone's reputation. So when I do anything, I'm very, very careful. If I got a file before me, I'm going to read every document on that file. I'm going to follow the train of what happened. I'm going to follow all of the evidence. Before I say anything about anybody, I'm going to ensure that I am totally convinced that I'm correct. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that I said in Parliament that I will take back. I followed that up by saying that if any of those persons against whom I made allegations had any concerns, I would open the file to them. Mm-hmm. I have had no takers. I want you to understand, however, that there's no malice in what I do. I was hired by the Bahamian people. I have a job to do. That aspect of it I've done. Now I have to get on with building this country, and I've got a lot of building to do.
Let me ask you a question. When the former Minister of Environment and Housing was arrested, the next day, well, not the next day, but later that day, there was a voice note sent around by the interim leader of the Progressive Liberal Party, addressed to members of that party. Mm-hmm. One of the things that that the interim leader of the PLP questioned was whether it was possible to get for the former minister to get a fair trial in this jurisdiction, given. As I say, I said at the beginning of the show, how thin are the fact that there really is no distance between the electorate and the government. Given how close the society is, given that you can pick up a telephone and call the prime minister, given also the tremendous appetite that we have for politics and all things to do with politics in this country, do you think it is possible for in this case, Ken Dorsett as the former Minister of Housing and Environment, to get a fair trial in the Bahamas.
Mr. Parker, I did not hear that voice note. But the person who you mentioned as the interim leader of the opposition is someone I respect his legal knowledge quite highly. Mm. I respect him as a person. But the reality is, if he said that, he was wrong, and he ought to retract it. Our system of justice is based on us finding a number of Bahamian people who are going to make decisions about their fellow man. A fellow in Beantown, a fellow in Carmichael, a fellow in Kalani, they want whatever's best for their country to the same extent. They want to ensure that they're seeing justice done, notwithstanding their political beliefs. If someone is wrong, they're going to call it as it is, as they see it. And if they perceive that someone is being treated wrongly, improperly, they will call it that way. But when the evidence gets before the court, I trust myself in the hands of my fellow Bahamians. I trust them to make the decision that is right, that their conscience demands that they make. And anyone who says that you cannot get a fair trial in the Bahamas is just wrong. Mm-hmm. They're just wrong. I have faith in Bahamians, and I believe that they will do the right thing in all circumstances like that.
The statement was lengthy and raised a number of questions, but I will let you get it in your own time and listen to it. I won't necessarily press you on it any further. We were talking about this idea of misfeasance in public office. For me, it seems that action that was floated as a possibility of what someone could be charged with if there was a charge to be brought.
Well, I think when you're talking about a charge, you're talking about malfeasance.
Forgive me, yes. But the point I'm making is, it seems that there is an orientation towards punishment. But my question is, the investigations that would yield the evidence that would support that punishment are likely to be lengthy, or are we talking about investigations that are already complete with information already transmitted to the Attorney General?
Mr. Parker, I am sure that Mr. Dames would not put anyone before the courts without having the evidence. Mm-hmm. Remember now, it is not he as a political officer doing this. It is our police officers. So anyone who's been put before the court, you can be sure that the evidence has been reviewed by our police officers who are committed to seeing justice done. You can be assured that those police officers may be PLP, they may be FNM, they may be DNAs. You don't know what would they
or
support.
Be NCP.
They no, I don't think so.
I have it on.
I don't know how many votes. I don't know how many votes that party got. Forgive me.
Not very many. Okay, but I still have it on good authority that at least one or two.
Okay. Yeah, so yeah. They may be. Yeah. What I'm saying is this. They are not politically biased. They're making decisions that affect the lives of people. They're not going to make these decisions based on politics. They make them on hard evidence. Many Bahamians were upset with us because they felt that things should have moved a lot quicker than they have. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, we have not made... This has not been a political exercise. This exercise has been and continues to be one of looking at evidence and making decisions. For example...
Please. I don't know if you want... Yeah, without Jonathan Ashe, does Ken Dorsett go before the court?
Quite frankly, I don't know because I'm not involved in it. As I told you, it's not a political exercise.
Right.
It's not something for Desmond Bannister to be involved in. Mm-hmm. It's something for professional officers to be involved in. I don't know, and I don't want to know.
Mm-hmm.
And if I asked, Mrs. Deems would probably tell me it's none of my business.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it ought to be.
And this stance of proper behavior by cabinet ministers is all well and good, given the stance of yourself and other people in the cabinet of we are men of integrity. But Jerome Fitzgerald also said he was a man of integrity. Mm-hmm. Frankly speaking, so did Shane Gibson, so did Ken Dorsett, and so did any number of other people in the Christie cabinet who I personally would question whatever integrity they say they stand on. But what is there that is in place or will be in place to prevent the current Minister of the Environment, Juan Romuald Ferreira, from ending up in the same complications that affected Ken Dorsett?
Well, quite frankly, I sit around a table with a lot of men and a young woman who I have great respect for. Let me say that at first. I don't perceive that we're going to have the kinds of issues that you saw happening in an administration that Bahamians perceive to be a runaway train. It just seemed that nobody was in charge, and it seemed that everybody was doing whatever they wanted to do. And Bahamians saw that. You saw how they voted. They voted the same way throughout the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so they perceived that, and they said, this is something we have to stop. That's the first thing. The second thing is that the Prime Minister has deliberately not taken on a portfolio. He is deliberately and very carefully ensuring that whatever policies we put in place are policies that are such that our people would wish to see, and that ensure that if there is wrongdoing, that wrongdoing is exposed. I think at one of the very first occasions that he spoke, he indicated that if somebody went astray in a manner in which we believe that members of the former administration did, that their heads are going to end up being chopped off. And so...
Yeah, but what is there?
There is a code of ethics,
mm-hmm,
that we are putting in place to ensure, first of all, to ensure that people understand and appreciate what their responsibility is. But if they breach that code of ethics, if by chance they breach it, and they find some way to do something that is wrong, then they have to understand that they're not going to get the kind of mercy that the former administration gave, a misplaced mercy that the former administration gave to its members.
Putting in place, what does that mean? Because, again, I think that the administration has... I think, frankly speaking, I think you guys are mistaking just how much tolerance that you have among the electorate. I think people are very impatient.
Oh,
the electorate has blood in its eye right now. And when you say something like, we have a code of ethics that we are putting in place, I would like to hear a deadline. And I would like to hear the accountability mechanisms. And so help me out there.
Well, I think you're right that people are impatient. I don't believe that they have blood in their eyes. People
don't have 35 seats. They got blood in their eyes.
People want to see us do right. They want to see us do what is right.
Yes, very much so.
And they want to ensure that people who have done wrong are punished. They want to see that. I said that in the budget debate. By the same token, Bahamians also, I think, by and large, understand that everything is not going to get done overnight. We understand what the limits are. We understand what the concerns are. We are not taking our people for granted. I will tell you that on the 11th of May, I had a crowd of constituents at my office. Mm. because they want to see certain things happen. And even if I meet with them, even if I meet with constituents every night, I'm not going to see all of them within the time that they'd like me to see them in. But the reality is they appreciate that we are working to do what is right. And when people see that, when they see the posture the Prime Minister has taken, when they see the code of ethics that we are adopting, when they see that we have to bring legislation in a number of areas, and that legislation can't come until it's drafted properly, then they appreciate that we are doing what is right. And so when you have the next parliamentary term and you see certain pieces of legislation come, and I can't speak to those that now because those are issues that have been decided by cabinet. But you will see legislation that will come before parliament that will put safeguards in place in relation to all of us.
Minister, the question that I am returning to is not what, because the administration, people wrongly ask, in my view, it's wrong to ask why the FNM has no plan or hasn't presented a plan. I think that's silly because I think that's what the manifesto is. I think the manifesto is a very clear plan.
Yeah.
But what I have an issue with is not what, it's when. So the timelines, firstly, are absent from the manifesto, which makes sense, it's whatever. They're absent from the speech from the throne, which is the Bible for this particular term in office. And you can't say within this term counts as a timeline. That doesn't count as a timeline. So give me some sense of...
Let's say this. Manifestos and speeches from the throne never have timelines.
I'm not suggesting it was an oversight. I'm just saying that's not a part of the character of those documents.
It's just like this nonsense that the... members of the former administration have put forward about us parliament closing for the summer. They as former legislators know better. We were not in power before May 10th. We have to be able to give instructions to the Attorney General's office on the legislation that we want drafted. In order to have, we have a legislative agenda, but in order to have the legislation drafted, we have to give them instructions and the professionals have to draft it. It is not an overnight process. This has happened in every single administration for all of my lifetime. And the reality is, until we can get the draftsmen to draft it properly and give them appropriate time to do their professional job, you can't bring it before Parliament. Because the courts will, if you bring something silly before Parliament, the courts will destroy it, the courts will cut it up. So we had to break for the summer. And breaking for the summer doesn't mean that we don't work, because I still get to my job at 7 a.m. every morning, and I'm still there most days after dark at the Ministry of Works. We are still working, but we are also giving instructions at this time to the Attorney General's office, to the draftsman, to draft the legislation that we are bringing before Parliament when we meet again. And so when Parliament meets in September, you will see legislation that tells you exactly what this administration intends to do at any number of levels with respect to corruption.
So you tell me I got to wait till September.
Mr. Parker, you sound like you want a microwave society too.
I don't want a microwave society.
You have three brothers I know who are very good attorneys. And if we brought legislation that impacted any of their clients in a negative way, and that legislation didn't meet the constitutional test, that legislation didn't meet tests and drafting, you would probably be the first one to shout out to them, and they would be in courts, quite rightly, defending those persons who are impacted.
You're not wrong, yes. But I'm not
I'm sorry, I said three brothers, two brothers.
I was like, I sent my brother a message. And we have a brother I don't know about.
Two brothers and your father.
Yes, thank you. But it isn't that I don't want a microwave society. I want to be able to look at you and say, Minister Bannister, you said you would do X by Y, and Y has come and gone, and you haven't done X.
We are 2 months after an election, Mr. Parker.
You are, yes.
We don't draft legislation like that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen. You know it as well as I do. So I think the best thing for us to do is to educate our people about the process rather than having them expecting that on May 11th, we're going to bring legislation before the House of Assembly when we did not have access to the drafters, to the people who draft and who vet that legislation. I know that you know much better. And I know that you threw that out to me for particular reasons, but let's educate our people about what has to happen, how the process has to work, so that we can have sound legislation that meets the test of constitutionality, and it also meets the test, that legal tests that we have to face.
Someone says that I've met my match.
That's some very kind person, probably from Carmichael.
We'll see. there are a couple other questions that I wanted to ask before I get back to the corruption issue.
Okay.
Although they're very connected, in my view. Are foreigners helping draft the legislation?
The draftsman that I'm aware of is a Bahamian who is an outstanding, exceptional legal draftsman. It is an entire department.
Mm-hmm.
I know that over the years we have had retired judges who have been involved in it. I know also that from time to time we have had lawyers from other countries who have been in that department. I don't know the composition of that department now.
Mm-hmm.
I also know that very few countries create legislation on their own. And so generally, our people will be looking at legislation that has been successfully implemented in other countries. So you may have someone looking at legislation in New Zealand or Australia or Jamaica or the United States or Britain. I can't tell you the composition of the legal drafting department. But if there are non-Bahamians there, they would be very, very few.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. It's a question that showed up on my text message. Sure.
You have an advantage over me.
I will read some of these text messages. They run the gamut of what we've been talking about so far. This one, very simple. Corruption promotes disrespect, which I think is... Yeah. Succinct. This one says, why has no government had a serious conversation about diversification? Example, large-scale fishing, mariculture industry, etc. And he recommends that we go talk to Ford Motor Company and the like. Another texter says, lock them up, lock them all up, and throw away the key. And subsequently says, man, you know one can't get a fair trial in this jurisdiction. And this one says, QC Monroe says, man, y'all duplicating charges, and no such charges are on the books. I have here a question. Did PM Minnis get rid of that StatCare contract yet?
Of who?
The StatCare contract. I think there's a building involved. We'll come back to that. Quincy, tell Mr. Bannister, this is funny. We want our pound of flesh and blood, and they must find a way to get it.
You know,
we want our pound of flesh, sir.
The Bahamian people, I spoke to that in the budget debate.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I've been a lawyer for 29 years, Mr. Parker. And it's important for us to want justice.
Mm-hmm.
If justice occurs, if we bring the charges before the courts, if the jury looks at the charges and make the right decision, if the judge does his job, our system works.
Mm-hmm.
What you don't want is a system that you have in Cuba or what you have in China or what you have in any number of other countries where you could be brought before the court. You see, remember now, today it's one person. Tomorrow it may be you or your son or your daughter who's picked up. When that happens, you want a fair process.
Mm-hmm.
you want to know that the charges, that you have able to get a lawyer who defends you and fairly and is listened to. You want to know that you have a jury of your peers who are going to be fair and reasonable and listen to the evidence and not make up their minds beforehand. You want to know that you have a judge who is fair, because that's you or your son. Well, the same thing applies to everybody else. No matter how I may feel about anything that somebody has done in relation to my country, I trust our judicial system. I trust that they're going to get it right. I am not going to talk down to them as was done in Parliament of our country, which I think was really, really disgusting. That we have to ensure that we build up a system that we as Bahamians have trust in, because someday it's going to affect somebody who you know. It's going to affect someone who may be close to you, and you want justice.
Yeah. Justice, not a pound of flesh. I hear you. This one says, hello, Quincy. The minister sounds necessarily cautious, but during the campaign, this level of caution should have been emphasized to the public so as to allay overly great expectations expeditiously. This one, okay. Quincy, please tell the good minister that Prime Minister Minnis had 5 years before he was elected to put legislation together. So at this stage, his government should be vetting what the FNM has proposed. Deadlines are very important because they keep you focused on getting the job done. The electorate are anxious, so sir, y'all put on your Nike shoes and just do it. No more talk, please.
Well, that's obviously someone who doesn't understand the process. I tried to explain the process very, very clearly. It's important for them to understand how the process works. Mr. Minnis is a doctor. He doesn't sit down and draft legislation. There are people who are specialists who do that.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, we have to reform our parliament, because in other parliaments in other countries, they have what are called parliamentary draftsmen. So we still rely on the Attorney General's office to draft legislation. So we have to bring reform to our country so that we can catch up with what the other countries are doing.
We're going to talk about the parliament with our last 20 minutes, too. This one says, good day, all. Quincy, when I become prime minister in the next 15 years, I'm recruiting you to be...
So you do have your fans.
If this RAJ is who I think it is, I'm flattered beyond all measure. And I'm going to leave that alone. This one, they say, we ain't playing. Which administration appointed you QC? Okay, I think that's in response to your statement about pound of flesh versus justice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lord have mercy. Okay. Last text message before we get back to my questions and your statements. This one says, please ask the good minister that we are hearing than words that he is speaking. But the reality of the matter is this same minister was a part of the former FNM government that was fired by us. Ask him, when will he say sorry for the position that the FNM helped mess up this country? Please let him know that we are not falling for talks. We need jobs. All this mess isn't only PLP mess.
Let me say, Mr. Parker, that I'm very proud of the service that I gave in the Cabinet of the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. I was able to give that service in three different ministries, in the Attorney General's office, in the Ministry of Youth, Sports and Culture, and in the Ministry of Education. When I left those ministries, the new government came in 2012, they looked to see what I had done. They could not find anything that I had done that was something that they could have brought up to critique me on negatively. Mm-hmm. The worst thing they said about me was that I spent, I think, $1 million in Andhra's. Well, I did, because the schools in Andhra's were a terrible mess, and you could not have expected the children in Andhra's to learn in the conditions that they were being in. I'm still being complimented on that now, and I would still spend money on our children, providing the opportunity for education at any time. I'm proud of the work that the former administration that I served under did. All of those ministers who served, I'm proud of what they did. They did an amazing job in the worst recession that this country has ever faced, that the world has faced in our lifetime. We did an amazing job.
Would you accept the last part of the texter's premise that the mess the country is in, and let's be frank, the country is in a mess, is not only the result of the PLP?
We had a recession in 2008, 2009, that has caused many problems for our country. To the extent that that recession has changed the way we look at any number of things, I think we all have to appreciate the reality of that. The issues that we face nowadays, many of those issues relate to poor planning for the future of our country. You know, when I look, for example, at our schools, and I look at so many of our public schools, and I say to myself, how do we expect children to learn in this environment? And I think the Minister of Education has rightly championed now ensuring that we have an environment where our children could learn in schools. He's going to have to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to do that. So it's not an issue of blaming. It's an issue of looking and determining where we're going to go to make changes for things that were not done properly in the first place. Those schools, the schools that are greatest risk, were built, I think, in the 1970s. Government High, 1975 or 1976, around then. We have these issues that we have to look at and plan. We have a post office that's fallen down. We have a Clarence Bain building that's a total disaster.
You did mention some things about those things that I'd like to get to.
Sure.
Forgive me for interrupting, but the time is passing. In terms of the examples of, to get back to this misfeasance thing, you mentioned BAMSI. You termed it a free for all. You said, I believe it had degenerated into a free for all by the end or whatever. On this station, I have kept a fairly clear running tally. When Mr. Christie first talked about BAMSI, the figure was $1 million. Mm-hmm. The next time he talked about it was on the floor of the House during a budget presentation when the figure was $4 million. Then the next thing we heard, the figure was $23.5 million. And then V. Alfred Gray said the figure was more than $50 million. And after that, we stopped hearing how much money had been spent with respect to the Bahamas Agriculture and Marine Sciences Institute. So, tell us, because the last person we asked was the guy with the checkbook. Mike Halkidis was on a show on this channel, and he was asked directly how much has been spent on BAMSI, and Halkidis, whom I love and respect tremendously, could not say how much money had been spent on BAMSI. So let me ask you, can you tell us,
Quincy,
how much money has been spent on BAMSI?
I have no idea, I'm working to try to find out. If you come in my office now, you will find that half of my table is covered with files from BAMSI. And that's that goes, you know, I think that pile is about 2 feet high and is about 3.5 feet long. It is a tremendous amount of information. What I do know is that there were abuses. I've had to stop some BAMSI contracts just this week that were started in 2014. My understanding is that, for example, people would go down to BAMSI, go down to Andros with contracts in their hands, and they'd give them to their supporters. These people would start the work. You had work that was unscoped. You had work that the Ministry of Works was not involved in. You had utter confusion. And out of that utter confusion, it is very difficult to know the extent to which the money that the Bahamian people paid in taxes, what extent has been abused. I suspect that the Minister of Finance at some stage will be able to tell us. But the reality is when you create something outside the mainstream of governance, when you create something where your ministries that are that ought to have regulatory oversight are not involved. When you create the kind of circumstances that we faced with BAMSI, the reality is it's going to take quite a bit of time. Not 2 months, as we've had, quite a bit of time to get to the bottom of it.
Fair enough, fair enough. There are a couple of us that don't understand something. Mm-hmm. This is not on my list of questions, so give me 30 seconds of leeway here.
That's okay. I know you have lots of help coming in.
The administration is taking on and taking ownership of some of the things that the Christie administration left in place that have been problematic. Out of an abundance of caution or desire not to quote-unquote stop, review, and cancel, that's all well and good. But if BAMSI is so problematic, why continue the program? If NHI was so problematic, why continue it? Why keep going with urban renewal when all that you did while you were the opposition was complain about urban renewal?
You know,
Mr. You can answer those ones, but I want to ask you about BAMSI in particular.
Well, let me ask you this. If you have a child who's always getting in trouble in school and has been problematic and you've had issues with discipline, should I ask you the question, Mr. Parker, why keep that child in your house? Reality is, you have spent millions, maybe hundreds of millions of dollars of the Bahamian people's money on this project called BAMSI. You have some goals.
So they poured so much money down that black hole that now we have to go chase that money?
No, you have goals that may be laudable. None of us said that BAMSI may not have been a good idea.
BAMSI is a great idea.
What we're saying is that the abuses that occurred in BAMSI are abuses that have to be curtailed. And so we seek now to bring some discipline to the process. If contractors are not performing, they will get letters from me and they will be off the property. And we're going to get people who have properly scoped works, people who are going to be accountable, and people who have timelines to do the work.
Fair enough.
If the agricultural aspect of BAMSI is not working, they're going to hear from Minister Wells. Mm-hmm. We're going to be sure that this process works because the investment that has been made in it is something that we are going to have to account for.
Sure. Fair enough. Is it true that they have marble floors on some of those stalls?
I'm going to visit soon.
All right.
I'm going to visit.
Yeah, let me know when you go. I want to report. I'm going to skip the questions about the mismanaged capital projects in Grand Bahama. You were very clear about that in the House. I'm going to skip the questions about the new Parliament because we only have 10 minutes left.
Well, I don't know what questions you had, so whatever questions you asked,
so I'm going to go now to two things that I think are very important. The first one is you've expressed a concern about BPL's ability to keep the lights on in the summer. Mm-hmm. Pardon me. BPL is, I believe, one of the most misunderstood entities in the entire society. Ultimately, though, I don't think it matters whether you understand it or not. The fact is, the entity that's supposed to keep the electricity on can't keep the electricity on. The past 5 years, Christie administration made, particularly with Leslie Miller as the executive chairman of BEC, made repeated promises about purchasing backup generators and getting enough generation so that that they could. But when Power Secure took over, there was this question about how well and how frequently the equipment had been maintained. And I think that the government entities get lost in the weeds and think that we care about the maintenance reports and these things, right? That's important to the people who work at BPL. But that's not important to the consumer. The consumer just wants to know, number one, why I'm paying so much and the lights can't stay on. And number two, why the lights can't stay on. So,
well, I think you got your numbers mixed up. In my constituency in Carmichael, they want to know why they're having power cuts every day. People in Abaco want to know why the power can't stay on. People in Nagua want to know why the power is off for 3 days.
So how did I get my numbers mixed up?
You had it as number two.
Oh, okay. Sorry. My bad. Yes.
They want to know why when they come home from work in the afternoon, the power's off. And that's a very legitimate question for all Bahamians to ask. And so those who are in governance may try to explain the process of getting it back on and getting it to work. But they really want to know why they can't be comfortable at night and why it's hot and miserable and why they have to suffer through that. We have, those of us who are charged with responsibility, have to ensure that that stops. That's very important part of the process.
The question stands, though. Is it possible that BPL can be brought into order?
I have no question about that, Mr. Parker. And the only thing I'm going to say is watch what we do. We have appointed a board that is highly capable. That board has two outstanding engineers on it, two exceptional accountants, a lawyer who I call a bulldog of a lawyer, a fraud manager. This is an amazing board. They are going to ensure, and I've told them, there's not going to be any political interference with me. I just want the best job that they can do. And these people have had tremendous success in our society, and they are highly respected. They are going to ensure that we have electrical power and that it costs less. That is not going to be something that they can do overnight because the machinery is antiquated. It is outdated. It does keep breaking down. Some of our employees are working in conditions that are terrible, horrible. I was in Black Point over the weekend, and just to see the noise pollution that our workers are subject to, it was terrible to see, because these are young men who we have to be concerned about as to whether they're going to, when they get 30 or 40, whether they're going to be able to hear. But at the same token, we have to be able to ensure that there's a reasonable price for electricity. The Bahamas has been left behind. Other countries in our region have been able to generate power in a different way than we have been able to. They've been able to use solar. They've been able to use waste energy. They've been able to use any number of fuels. LNG is something that people talk about now, but may not be the only one. We have to be able to bring in machinery that's up to date. And we have to ensure that the power stays on. It is not an overnight process because it's taken so long for us to get to this stage. But we have to reform the process.
How much money is it going to cost to get BPL in a place where we can count on power all year round?
I expect that the conversion and the machinery and the process, whoever is going to invest in it, I expect that they're going to spend at least $500 million and even more. And I expect that the models that we look to take will be such that we're going to end up purchasing power at very, very low prices, prices that protect our consumers so that we can pass it on. And so that the investors will make something back on their investment, not a killing. But they'll make a decent return on their investment. That's what capitalism is supposed to be about. And quite frankly, that is how we are going to have to build, construct a lot of the buildings that we need in our society. But there is no microwave answer. It has gone on for too long. And we are going to try to do the process as quickly as we can, as fairly as we can, and as reasonably as we can.
Are you satisfied as an administration that Power Secure is the right partner for the job you want to do?
I'm not satisfied about anything. Not anything. Every single day I go to work, I try to prove myself, and every single day anybody under my administration has to prove themselves. Mm. So we're looking at agreements that are in place. We're looking at what Power Secure does. We have very cordial discussions with them. But there is nothing that I am satisfied with. I wasn't elected and put in that ministry to be satisfied with things.
Then you have answered me in a very lawyerly fashion, which I appreciate, given your profession. But let me ask you again, differently, is Power Secure in danger of losing its contract?
I will not be unfair to anybody, Mr. Parker, but remember that all of my loyalty is to the Bahamian people. First, foremost, second, third, fourth, and fifth, the Bahamian people. And so what is important to me is that whoever is there is going to be working for the Bahamian people in their best interest and in the way that saves them the most money.
And do you, my last question about BPL and Power Secure and whatever else, is whether or not you have in the ministry an internal timeline for a certain level of performance as a baseline?
There is no timeline in place with respect to a particular company. Mm-hmm. But I want to ensure that there are certain efficiencies that are put in place. And those efficiencies are matters that are going to be important for us to be able to move on so that we can have the kind of reliable power supply that we need to have.
Go ahead.
It is unfair for me to come on the radio and talk about Power Secure or any other company without first discussing the issues with them.
Fair enough. That's
what's important.
Fair enough. I can accept that, but nonetheless, my questions stand as they do. The statutory boards seem to be late or delayed in being named. I just want to put that out there while I read you this text message. This person will have the last word. It says, Quincy, can you ask the minister about fixing the major roads, example, East Bay Street, West Bay Street, keeping the foliage around roundabouts in order, etc., at the airport roundabouts, the need for multiple visits from garbage trucks at Potter's Key, Fish Fry, and Montague. We need a comprehensive look at maintaining these sites. Yeah. So clearly, people are looking for the Ministry of Public Works to get on the stick right away. No waiting around to see. Go do some.
Absolutely.
Go do some stuff.
Go to work. And those are imperatives of our government. Remember now, only the first one that they mentioned comes under my ministry. Mm-hmm. The other two come under the Ministry of the Environment. But they are imperatives of our government. And all of us are responsible. We take collective responsibility. The street paving, there's an area in West Bay Street that they're probably speaking about, which has a tremendous amount of work to be done to it. But the street can't be paved because we have to put water mains there.
Right. That's a separate conversation, yeah, Minister. Yeah. We're out of time, and I don't want to rob Hubert Minister of any of his. What I would like to say, I would like to give you the last word about whether or not, in your view, corruption, misfeasance of the sort that that you identified, and I'm linking the two because in my view, misfeasance is a very clear form of corruption. Does it have an effect on the Bahamas? What effect, if you could sum it up, does that kind of corruption have on the Commonwealth of the Bahamas?
If the leaders are perceived to do things that are wrong, then adults, children, ordinary citizens believe that is the right course of action to take, and they follow it. And that permeates throughout our society. And so we've got to stop it at the top. Once we stop it at the top, we have to ensure that it doesn't happen at any other level in our society. And so I'm convinced that we are going to set that type of example in our cabinet, but we're also going to demand more from our people. We're going to demand a higher standard. We're going to demand a higher standard in public service. We're going to demand the highest standards throughout our society. And I think the Bahamians will appreciate that coming from their government.
Minister of Public Works, Desmond Bannister, thank you very much, T. Desmond Bannister, for your time and candor this afternoon. Ladies and gentlemen, Hubert Edwards is coming up next, not Hubert Minnis, Lord have mercy on our souls, along with Dwayne. I see you there from alive. Don't worry about that. I got your number. Folks, thank you very much for tuning in, and may God bless you until next week, Minister. Thanks again. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.